For anybody out there who studies language, the internet and everything people write on it has been a game changer. The way we write has been evolving thanks to emails, blogging, Twitter, and other forms of social media. And for linguists, there's so much data flying around to study. Gretchen McCulloch is an internet linguist. Her new book is called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. Gretchen, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, with all the communication on the internet, all the words out there, as a linguist, does it feel like, you know, you're at the receiving end of a fire hose?
I think it's fantastic. You know, I can't even go on Twitter to, you know, hang out with my friends without coming across something like, maybe I should be analyzing that as well. So there's never a dull moment.
And you write in your book that, okay, we've had for a long time kind of a, when it comes to talking, a formal register, I'm making a fancy speech versus a casual conversation. I'm talking to my buddies. Writing mostly has been on the formal side. We haven't had as much of a casual form of writing that was really, you know, a daily thing. But now we do. Talk about the significance of that.
Yeah, exactly. So the casual form of writing used to be limited to things like letters or diaries or notes on the kitchen table, but a lot of people didn't write on a daily basis. And now you can barely organize a birthday party without sending text messages. And this makes it really interesting because the kinds of things that we expect out of informal language, like conveying tone of voice, conveying emotional nuances, being able to understand sarcasm, are things that we're evolving ways to do in writing.
Right. That's a key point that because this is unfamiliar territory, there's constantly new frontiers here. We're often going in not knowing what the rules are and either inventing them on the fly or trying to fit into what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, exactly. As a linguist, I like to look at language, linguistic rules as an emergent rules. You know, when you go into a forest, no one's maintaining that forest and, you know, carving it up into particular places the way you do with a garden. But the forest still has order. You know, the trees and the grasses and the bushes are all in different spots and they're all in a relationship with each other. And linguistic rules that we do subconsciously also have this kind of order to them, even though they're not the kind of prescriptive rules that a lot of people would think of when they think of language.
And a lot of times when people look at those changing rules or the prescriptive rules and what people actually do, anything new and different, people think of as a bad thing. They're worried about a degradation of the language. Do you look at the internet that way?
Absolutely not. I think the internet is incredibly exciting, and it's easy to project our anxieties about the future or onto how younger people are talking, but it's really interesting, and it's a lot more fun. It's better for your blood pressure to have this attitude of, you know, curiosity and excitement when it comes to linguistic change, because language has always been changing. You know, we don't talk the way Shakespeare did, and in 500 years, people won't talk the way we do. So we can be excited about these historic changes now.
Talking to Gretchen McCulloch, her new book is called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. She's a co-host of the Lingthusiasm podcast. We're talking about the way the internet, the ever-evolving internet, is changing the way we write. Gretchen, are there, as we look back at the however many decade history of whatever we want to call the internet in various forms, are there general rules that you see coming up again and again?
One thing that I find is really interesting is that ways of expressing yourself, so punctuation or words that initially meant genuine enthusiasm, eventually take on this connotation of ironic enthusiasm or irony in general. And there's a whole bunch of different ways that happens. You have something like LOL, which starts out meaning laughing out loud, but eventually takes on this sense of aspirational laughter. I wish I was laughing. I acknowledge that was funny, and maybe I should have laughed, but I didn't laugh, but I'm going to pretend I did anyway to make myself seem more polite. But in addition, you have this sense of, okay, well, I didn't actually mean that sincerely. Here's this hint towards a double meaning that I want to add. And that's where LOL is really ending up. But you see this with punctuation. You see this with all sorts of different ways of expression, that enthusiasm gradually gives way to irony, and then you need something new to convey genuine enthusiasm.
And that's one of the big challenges of online communication, and a lot of people have run into this. You and I are talking now. We can tell from our inflection and our tone of voice if I'm saying LOL or LOL. If we're in person, we could see the gestures and the facial expressions. We don't get any of that kind of contextual information. And that seems like one of the big things that drives experimentation when we're typing to each other online.
Exactly. And it's before the internet as well, because there have been people searching for an irony punctuation mark as early as 1575, when a British printer said, maybe we could use a backwards question mark for it. And of course, we know that didn't catch on. And over hundreds of years, people have been saying, well, it would be great if we had a way to, you know, to communicate irony in writing more clearly. But it wasn't till the internet that various ways of doing so really caught on in a to a large extent.
Yeah, talk about some of the ways people have tried. Like, if I'm people often know me in person as a sarcastic person, so I feel like in email I have to overcompensate and like I got to put in that exclamation point or they're going to read me negatively or sarcastically.
Right, exactly. So people often use the single exclamation mark as a way of indicating, you know, genuineness or sincerity or excitement or that kind of, I think of it as that like Walmart smile, you know, like have a nice day. but it which can be a very sort of pro-social thing to do. And conversely, sometimes people use, for example, asking questions without a question mark as a way of indicating a deadpan or rhetorical question. You know, what could possibly go wrong? But without that question mark can indicate that that's an ironic question. But what's exciting to me is that there's a whole range of ways of communicating irony, because rather than just one single ironic punctuation mark, because if we wanted one single way of making our sentences completely clear, we already have a way of doing that, and it's called not being sarcastic.
We're talking to internet linguist Gretchen McCulloch. Her new book is Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language. We'll go to a caller now. Marissa is with us in Madison. Marissa, hi. What did you want to bring up, Marissa?
I've been noticing that people my age, I'm in my 20s, and a lot of my friends, when they use exclamation points, they actually do a space and then an exclamation point. And I've heard that that's a relic of the typewriter era, and that it's no longer necessary. And these are people that I know that a space doesn't go there. So I'm kind of curious how that's becoming a thing on the internet.
Marissa, thanks for the call. Gretchen, have you seen this text space exclamation point?
Yes, I have. A lot of people have been asking about it recently, actually. There's a couple responses that people have when I ask them why they do this. One is, so there are some languages in which the space before the exclamation point is completely standard. In French, this is the classic way of punctuating things. And other people point out that for them in English, using the space before the exclamation point seems to add a layer of softening. So it makes it a little bit less aggressive, perhaps. Or, you know, it adds a sort of additional layer of doing that. And other people say that for them, it's just a typo. You know, when you go back and add a word in before the exclamation part and you just press the space to, you know, make your phone confirm that it's there, sometimes it's just happenstance. So there's a variety of reasons for this one. But I think the softening meaning may be the one that Marissa is referring to.
Marissa, thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Gretchen, a thing that's happened, I think, since the early days of internet forums and chat rooms and things like that is people quickly evolve their own sub-languages or phrases or words catch on. And for a newcomer, it's like an alien sub-language that's hard to fit into. Do you see this happening?
This is not even exclusive to the internet. You know, any group of people that spend a lot of time with each other, whether that's a particular school or particular hobby, a particular geographic area, any group of people that talk more to each other than to others are going to have their in-group ways of talking and their inside jokes. And the internet just makes those a lot more visible because we're used to those in-jokes happening in speech, but we're not as used to seeing them in writing. This is this informal writing, you know, increase that we were talking about earlier. So absolutely, it's definitely something that happens on the internet, but it's not exclusive to the internet.
And in your book, Gretchen, you kind of break down different generational groups depending on when people entered the door of the internet, whether it was the first BBSs to the latest whatever's replacing TikTok at this moment. I don't know. Do you see a generation gap? Is it hard to type across generations?
I think the biggest generation gap that I see is whether people assume that writing has this sort of emotional expressive capacity or completely dismiss it. And, you know, I've had some people, often older, but it's not strictly an age thing, say, you know, how is it that anyone could be assuming I'm being passive aggressive to them? It's never even occurred to me to be passive aggressive in a text message. How is this even possible? And other people saying, but of course there's passive aggression here. I can't help but read this tone into it. So I think it's a big question of, you know, how much do you assume that writing is capable of a fully expanded emotional repertoire? And then when you assume that it's possible, you end up doing it and inferring in other people.
Well, let's talk then about the rise of emojis, in part to try to answer that question, these little, hopefully emotion conveying mini images. How did those come to be?
Well, emoji got their start in Japan in the 90s as a replacement for sending large pictures back and forth, because I don't know if you remember the 90s, but our capacity for sending picture messages was pretty limited at the time.
Loading.
Yeah. 5 minutes later, oh, look, you know, half the picture's there. A lot of Japanese cell phone carriers, Docomo, SoftBank, several others, decided to encode certain common pictures as if they were letters. So when you send the letter A to someone, you're not sending a picture to the letter A, you're just sending one code point that tells the other person's phone to make that. And it's much tinier, and so it loads really fast. And emoji are the same thing. They're like letters, the way the computer treats them. But when we see them, we see shapes and images and faces and things instead. Though they got eventually added to the general Unicode set that all of our phones and computers use and spread around the world.
As we wrap up, Gretchen, you're very brave because you've written a book about a moving target with things changing all the time. What are you watching now? What is an emerging trend that you have your eye on?
One thing that I'm really interested in is the expansion of video, and especially short form video, things like TikTok, Instagram stories, which came from Snapchat stories. And those were still developing as I was writing the book. You know, we had Vine at the time, and I did mention Vine in the book, but it wasn't quite as big of a genre. So I'd be really interested to see where we end up going with short form online video in the next few years.
Gretchen, thanks for joining us. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's internet linguist Gretchen McCulloch. We talked with her about her new book. It's called Because Internet, Understanding the New Rules of Language.